Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Vitale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminathan Namah. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachayane Nivisesha Sanyavadi Pashkati Desatahane. Om Janatvinandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Taksam Samadatan Jena Tasmaya Sri Gurave Namah. Sri Chaitanya Maravistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Upakadamayam Dadati Sarpanantikam. Mantikalpatuvyascha Kripasanyuvayivascha Patitam Bhamanayo Vaisanabhanamunam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he left the village of Komachatra, and he continued going south. In Komachatra, he had met the Brahmana named Korma, and he taught him how to preach in a very wonderful way. And he said, "Punarapi etani pabe mora sangha. If you just preach Amaragyai Guru Hai Tare Desh, if you chant Krishna's name, Krishna Krishna Nam Narantara, and you study Srimad Bhagavatam and Srimad Bhagavad Gita, and you preach, then Punarapi etani pabe more sangha. You will again have my association. I will be there. I will never leave you, practically speaking." And then Mahaprabhu left, and then a leper named Vasudev came to see Mahaprabhu, having heard that he was there, but Mahaprabhu had already left. And Vasudev fainted to the ground, so disturbed. It was like his life left his body. He had that much desire, he had such a desire to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that when he found out Mahaprabhu had already gone, he fainted. His life left, no purpose to his life, no existence, practically speaking. And then Mahaprabhu returned, and he embraced this leper whose name was Vasudev. And no one will embrace a leper, but Mahaprabhu embraced him. And by the embrace of Mahaprabhu, the leper Vasudev lost his leprosy, and he became very, very beautiful. And then he became fearful. It is such an astounding thing. Someone could be so repulsive that everyone is repulsed. No one wants to be near such a person, like if someone has leprosy. And then, in the next moment, if by the grace, by the mercy of another, one becomes beautiful, then immediately one could get proud. Immediately one will get proud. It is the nature of the mind and the false ego. There's one story of how, an incident. There was one sadhu who had many disciples, and he was going to pass away. He was going to leave this world. So his disciples were afraid of being left all alone. So they thought, "Who will we take shelter of after you depart?" And he told them that when you find a person who tells you how to deal with pride, he'll be the person. So they went after the spiritual master passed away. All the disciples were together, and after some time, they asked one of them, "How should we deal with pride?" And he replied, "It's not that you'll deal with pride and have it gone, because actually pride, it belongs to the Supreme Lord. So it's not that you deal with pride and it's gone. Rather, it's something that you'll have to struggle with till the last day of your life." He said something like that. And they accepted him as someone worthy of associating with. Pride is such a thing. There's another similar type of pastime about pride, that when this old sadhu was he was very close to also leaving this world, and he said that when I go to Yamaraj, he will ask me, "You committed this improper activity, why did you do it?" And Yamaraj And I'll tell Yamaraj, here's the reason, I have this excuse. And then he'll type in the next entry on the computer and the next, but why did you do this? And then I'll have a reason, I'm saying. And he went through all the different things he had done. And he said, I'll have a reason, for an excuse for every one of them. But then, if he asks me, knowing yourself as you know yourself better than anyone else knows yourself, why were you so proud? And the sadhu replied, to that question, I shall just put my head down and I will have no answer. An excuse for every other thing, but no excuse for pride. Because pride, it doesn't make any sense. We're so tiny, we're so insignificant. We know what we're like better than anyone else knows what we're like, and yet we become proud so easily. And also, Srila Sanatana Goswami says that humility or dainya and prema are the same. So the more one actually becomes humble, humble doesn't mean you can't do anything. Humble means that you take shelter of Krishna, knowing that you're an insignificant servant of Krishna. So if one fully, actually, deeply becomes humble, one will have his love for Krishna, just like that. So Mahaprabhu, this Koma, feared that in 1 second, from having become rejected by everyone due to my leprosy, in the next moment I'll become proud due to the fact that I got some mercy from Mahaprabhu. So he asked Mahaprabhu, how can I not become proud? And Mahaprabhu answered, more or less telling him the same thing that he told the Korma Brahman. He said, you always chant Krishna's names. You always chant Krishna's names. I'll find it exactly. If you chant the holy names incessantly, what does incessantly mean? Without ceasing, incessantly. So if you chant Krishna's names incessantly, you would never become unnecessarily proud. You never have abhiman, some pride. Narantara kaha tumi Krishna Krishna nam. And if you preached about Krishna, this was the second point. If you preach Krishna upadesh kari, divera nishtar acharete Krishna toma karibena angikar, you will become liberated from material life, free from material miseries, acharan, very quickly, and Krishna will accept him as his devotee. So, in one sense, the process is very simple. Just incessantly chant Hare Krishna and preach and tell other people the benefits of Krishna consciousness. Okay, now I will ask you a question. What is the connection between humility and ceaselessly chanting Krishna's names, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised Trinada Pisuni Chena, Torora Pisis, Nuna Manina Manadena, Kirtani Asadari. If you want to chant Krishna's names, you have to be humble. So what is, why? That is my question. What is the connection between humility and constantly chanting Krishna's names? Do you know? One answer is that it's natural. Just like when the child is very, very helpless, feels himself very helpless, then naturally the mother and father take special care of him. If he feels himself completely independent, I can do everything myself, then the parents, of course, will try to protect him, but they won't have their eye on him continuously. So if we feel ourselves completely helpless and surrendered to Krishna, then Krishna will take care of us. But there are other reasons. That's from Krishna's point of view. But from our point of view, what is the connection between humility and chanting constantly.
If if you're deeply humble, you're not depending on your own faculty, and therefore you're depending on another, which is Krishna.
Yeah.
Calling on him all the time.
But that's making the statement that if you're humble, you chant. But what is, on the psychological level perhaps, what is the connection between humility and constant chanting? What did Mahaprabhu say? How did he? Chinadapi sunichena turodapi amanina manadena. Giving respect to others and not demanding any respect for oneself. Because if one thinks oneself very great in this world, which is the opposite of being humble, then you're going to be constantly disturbed by the world, because this one won't do what you say, and this one won't pay any attention to you, and this happens, and that happens, and I don't like this, and still it happened, and this person did this in his way, and still it happened. So if you're always disturbed by these things, how will you chant constantly? The mind will just float away to so many points of disturbance. But if one is humble, then one says, okay, and can continue to chant. So if one is humble, one's mind can be peaceful. And if one is very proud, one will not be peaceful, because a proud person thinks, I am the center, I am the most important. But no one can convince the rest of the world of that point, that I am the center and I am the most important. So the universe and the world refuses to cooperate. So therefore, we are disturbed because we don't get what we want. Like a naughty child, do you sometimes get like that? That if you don't get what you want, you throw yourself on the ground and start crying? No. When you were little, you were like that, but not anymore. Okay. So, when Mahaprabhu finally left them, those two Brahmins stayed together, Vasudev and Korma. And when Mahaprabhu left, they just cried and cried and cried. They couldn't go with him. So then Mahaprabhu continued going. Gauranga Mahaprabhu continued going. And he went to the place of Lord Nrisimhadev called Jayadana Sringa in Singhachala. Has anyone been to Singhachala? Yeah, you went. Near Visakhapatnam or something. How long did you stay there?
One night.
So did you visit all the temples?
Just the main ones.
How many temples of the Nrisimhadev? There's a big hill, yes? Is that the Hovalam?
Hovalam, yeah, I went to.
Yeah.
All the nine temples.
Yes, but this is different. Singhachala is different?
Yeah, that's...
Are they near each other? Are they quite close to each other?
No, Ahobilam is 10 hours from Tirupati.
Yes.
And Simhachalam is, I think, closer to Visakhapatnam, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So Mahaprabhu, when he was near Visakhapatnam, where he was going, and he was going to meet Sri Ramananda Roy, Savabhoma Bhattacharya had told him, he should see Ramananda Roy, because even though he's the governor of the province there, because it was part of Orissa. He was serving under Maharaj Prataparudra. So he was serving as the governor there. don't think that he's a materialistic person. Actually, he's the most exalted of spiritual devotees. The most exalted. So you will be so happy when you meet him. So Mahaprabhu, not knowing where he was going, practically, seemingly, he just first went to this Nrisimha temple, and then soon he was going to go to the bank of the Godavari River. And there, by the arrangement of fate, he was going to meet Ramananda Roy. But first he goes to the temple of Nrisimha. We'll start in the first verse of this chapter. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is known as Gauranga, is the reservoir of all conclusive knowledge, the full knowledge, the tattva, the bhakti siddhanta, the conclusive knowledge in devotional service. Everything rests in him. But he empowered Sri Ramananda Roy, who may be likened to a cloud of devotional service. This cloud was filled with all the conclusive purports of devotional service and was empowered by the ocean to spread this water over the sea. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was the ocean of knowledge of pure devotional service. So what's going to happen when, and we won't be able to read much of this, perhaps when we return we can read this. This eighth chapter of Madhya Lila is one of the most important chapters in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it's very, very important and very, very wonderful and very sweet, and it covers many wonderful topics. Will you be here when I return? Where will you be?
I'll be in Australia.
When I return here, will you be here? In Australia, in Perth? You hope? I think you'll be here. But you'll be busy with your school, yes? Maybe not. Okay. So what's going to happen is Ramananda Roy, Mahaprabhu is going to ask Ramananda Roy questions, and Ramananda Roy is going to answer them, and Mahaprabhu is just going to listen and seemingly learn from Mahaprabhu, from Ramananda Roy. So the example that Kaviraj Goswami is using because in the beginning of every chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, he gives one verse that summarizes what's going to happen in the chapter. So here he says that Ramananda Roy is like a cloud. The cloud gets its water from the ocean, from the sea, from the process of evaporation. And then the cloud may rain the water back down on the sea. So similarly, Ramananda Roy got his knowledge from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he was like the cloud. And then his speaking to Mahaprabhu was just like the cloud compared to the cloud raining water back on its source. So the source of knowledge in this example is Mahaprabhu. And yet Ramananda Roy is getting the knowledge from him and going to rain it back down upon Mahaprabhu. Then he continues, Kaviraj Goswami. All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinda.
All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda. All glories to Advaita Acharya, and all glories to all the devotees of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. According to his previous program, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went forward on his tour, and after some days he arrived at the place of pilgrimage known as Jayada Nasinga Chetra. Purport. This Jayada Nasinga temple is situated on the top of a hill about 5 miles away from Visakhapatna. There is a railway station on the South Indian Railway known as Singhachal. The temple known as Singhachal, is the best temple in the vicinity of Visakhapatna. This temple is very affluent. Affluent means wealthy. And it is a typical example of the architecture of the area. Do you remember what it looked like?
I think it had a golden dome. Yeah.
It's on top of a hill. And is the temple really beautiful?
Yes.
And the Nisringadeva, what does he look like in there? How big is he?
I think he was small.
Okay.
Remember.
He remembers you, though. This temple is very affluent and is a typical example of the architecture of the area. In one stone tablet, it is mentioned that formerly a queen covered the deity with gold plate. This is mentioned in the Visakhapatna Gazetteer. About the temple, there are residential quarters for the priests and devotees. Indeed, at the present moment, there are many residential quarters to accommodate visiting devotees. The original deity is situated within the depths of the temple, but there is another deity, a duplicate,
known as the Vijayamurti. The smaller deity can be moved from the temple and is taken on public procession. That's the standard, especially in South India. They're the main deities. Well, not only South India, everywhere. And then there are smaller Vijayamurtis that are taken in procession. They can be taken out. And in South India, they take them on elephants. They put the deities on elephants. You know why? Did you ever ride an elephant? Do you want to ride an elephant? Very much? How much?
Very little.
Very little, that's what I thought. You want to ride a motorcycle? No. It's much safer on an elephant, I think. Unless you're a banana, then it is not very safe at all. I remember when elephants sometimes they'd come in Vrindavan and all the fruit sellers, they'd give something to the elephant. The elephants, when they'd walk past, and the elephant would go, because elephants remember. So they're afraid that if we don't give something to the elephant next time he comes down the road, he'll like,
in Jaipur, they have 200 elephants trained to go up and down to the Amber Palace.
Yeah.
And people pay 900 rupees to ride. It takes about 30 minutes maximum to ride into the palace on the top of an elephant. They have to walk down by themselves. So they take people up there and take people down. Mm.
Did you go on an elephant?
No, you watch them.
You watch them. So I've seen that in Udupi. The deities go on elephants and their processions every week. So they take the deities out on elephants, and of course in Mayapur they do that too. Have you been to Mayapur? Did you see the elephant procession? Well, I think you should. I think you need a refreshment of your going to Mayapur. Because you were little when you went?
I
can't even remember. How old was he?
I think we went 2.5 years back.
Okay.
He wasn't very small, but I don't know why he doesn't remember.
So after seeing the deity of Lord Nisringadeva in the temple, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offered his respectful obeisances by falling flat to the ground. Then in ecstatic love, he performed various dances. He chanted and offered prayers. So love for Krishna was awakening in his heart when he saw the deity. And this is what he said in these prayers that are said every day in Mayapur. Sri Nasinga, Jai Nasinga, Jai Jai Nasinga, Palalit Sujaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa. All glories to Lord Nisringadeva. All glories to Nisringadeva, who is the Lord of Prahlad Maharaj, and like the honeybee, is always engaged in beholding the lotus-like face of the goddess of fortune. So the goddess of fortune is compared to honey, and the Lord's eyes are compared to honeybees. Honeybees are they're dark in color, and so his eyes are always moving towards the goddess of fortune, so that glorifies him in that way. And there's some other verses here. Some of them are composed by Srila Sridhar Swami, the original commentator accepted on the Bhagavatam. So here's Prabhupada's purport. The goddess of fortune is always embraced by Lord Nisringadeva. This is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 1st and 10th cantos by the great commentator Srila Sridhar Swami. The following verse was composed by Sridhar Swami in his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam 1087.1. It means the prayers, the beginning of the prayers of the personified Vedas, that chapter. Did you ever read that chapter? Prayers of the personified Vedas? Very philosophical. But what are the personified Vedas? Are they walking books with legs? No. But it means they're the Brahmins, the people who know the Vedas, because they're carrying the knowledge. So different Vedas have different conclusions. So the conclusion of all the different Vedas are discussed in that chapter. So here, the goddess of fortune is always embraced by Lord Nisringadeva. This is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. So this was composed as an Srila Swami composes in his commentary, he composes verses that describe the chapter or the chapters or the or a canto even. So Vagesya Yasya Vadane Lakshmi Yasya Savaksasi Yasyasti Vidaye Samvit Tam Nisringam Maham Bhaje. Lord Nisringadeva is always assisted by Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and he's always embracing to his chest the goddess of fortune. The Lord is always complete in knowledge within himself. Let us offer obeisances unto Lord Nisringadeva. Similarly, in his commentary on the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 111, Sridhar Swami describes Lord Nisringadeva in this way. Prahlada Hridaya Ladam Bhakti Vidyavidaranam Sararindur Chimvande Parindra Vadanam Harim. Let me offer my obeisances unto Lord Nisringadeva, who is always enlightening Prahlad Maharaj within his heart and always kills the nescience that attacks the devotees, the ignorance, the darkness, tamagun. If Lord Nisringadeva Krishna Surya Sam Mayai Andhakar, when the Lord is in the heart, there's no question of darkness being in the heart. Just like if the sun is present in the sky, shining in the sky, there's no darkness. Did you ever see that? Did you ever see it as dark as night in the middle of the day? Because if the sun is shining, then darkness immediately goes away. And if you want, say if you go into your room and it's dark, what do you do?
Turn
on the light. And how do you get rid of the darkness?
The light.
Automatically the darkness goes, yes? You don't have to make a separate endeavor or work to get rid of darkness. If you just turn on the light. So similarly, if there's darkness in our heart, if there's ignorance in our heart, if we just put Krishna there in our heart, in our consciousness, and then Ride Stam Kuru Keshava Savam Harati Chittosmin. So all ignorance disappears, all sinful tendencies, everything disappears by placing Krishna in the heart, by remembrance, by chanting, by hearing about Krishna. So therefore, Mahaprabhu recommended Kirtaniya Sadahari. Let me offer my obeisances unto Lord Nisringadeva, who is always enlightening Prahlad Maharaj within his heart and always kills the nescience that attacks the devotees. His mercy is distributed like moonshine, and his face is like that of a lion. Let me offer my obeisances unto him again and again. So he's compared, Lord Nisringadeva is compared to two different things. In that verse by Sridhar Swami, who remembers those two things? And? Very good. And the moon. Very good. Although very ferocious. Ugro pu anugro evayam svabhaktanam nrikesari kesarivasa potanam anyasem ugra vikrama. Although very ferocious, the lioness is very kind to her cubs, to the little baby lions. Similarly, although very ferocious to non-devotees like Hiranyakashipu, Lord Nisringadeva is very, very soft and kind to devotees like Prahlad Maharaj. In this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was reciting these verses when he went to the temple and of Lord Nisringadeva. The priests of Lord Nisringadeva then brought garlands and the remnants of the Lord's food, Mahaprasad, and offered them to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As usual, a brahmana offered Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu an invitation. The Lord passed the night in the temple and then commenced his tour again. He commenced his tour. What does that mean?
That means he continued?
Yeah, he didn't or began. Again, he continued. The next morning, in the great ecstasy of love, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started on his tour with no knowledge of the proper direction. And he continued the whole day and night. He was chanting. He was just going south. But he didn't know where he was going. In his ecstasy, he was just traveling. As previously, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu converted to Vaishnavism many people he met on the road. And after some days, the Lord reached the bank of the river Godavari. When he saw the river Godavari, the Lord remembered the Yamuna River. And when he saw the forests on the bank of the river, he remembered Sri Vrindavan Dham. Tere Vana Deki Smriti Hoila Vrindavanam. Godavari Deke Hoila Yamuna Smaran. He remembered. So this is the way to live in this world. When we see something, a forest, we remember Vrindavan. When we see a river, the Swan River, we think of the Yamuna. What happens when you see a tram? What do you think of? How can that remind you of Vrindavan? Or a bus, huh?
The three-wheelers carrying so many people.
Radharani Express.
In Vrindavan, a tram. Or some, when you see those big trucks, what are they called with all the road trains or something? Yeah, you can think of Agasura or something. So after performing, so he was remembering Krishna. Then he sat down on the bank. And whenever you see a bank, so many banks in Perth, yes? You think of the bank of the Yamuna. So Mahaprabhu was thinking of Vrindavan wherever he went. And after performing his usual chanting and dancing for some time in the forest, the Lord crossed the river and he took his bath. He bathed on the other side of the Godavari. And after bathing in the river, the Lord walked a little distance from the bathing place and he engaged in chanting, Krishna Nama Sankirtane. He was just chanting and chanting. So not only did he tell the other people, all the people that he met, including Vasudeva and Korma, to chant Krishna's names, Sisasi Narantara Krishna Nama Kaha, but he himself followed that completely. It was completely natural. He didn't have to think, oh, now I say chant because I'm telling other people, so I have to do it myself. Or now, oh, I have to finish my rounds, I have to chant. No, he was spontaneously chanting because he had such a relationship with Krishna. He wanted to be with Krishna always. So he walked a little from the bathing place and he began to chant. And at that time, he heard some music. And Ramananda Roy came there, mounted on a palanquin to take his bath. Raise your hand if you've ever been on a palanquin. Yeah?
And I was, when our family went to...
And one day you're going to also be on a horse.
when our family went to Vaishnav Devi,
yeah.
To like climb the mountain,
oh,
and
yeah,
have
yeah.
Darshan. So at that time, halfway through, it was not a palanquin, but I sat in the...
Palki. That's a palanquin. Was it comfortable?
It was scary, just looking at how steep it was from the either yeah. side, and how I was just praying that the people were carrying me, they won't fall.
See how auspicious it is. As soon as you're in a palanquin, you stop praying. But they don't seem very comfortable. I've never been in one. They're not very comfortable. But in Jagannath Puri, I saw that deities being carried in a palanquin. Madan Mohan. There's like big deities, so there are like three or four or five palanquin carriers on each side, and they have to time their steps. Because if one's walking one way and another, they have to be in harmony with each other. Otherwise, it's difficult for the deity, even when they're in harmony, because like this. So many brahmanas following. So Ramananda Roy was in a palanquin. Do you know what a palanquin is? It's when there's like a carriage being carried on the shoulders of men. And inside that carriage was Ramananda Roy, who was the governor, a very important person. Now the people carrying it had to be very strong also. Many brahmanas following the Vedic principles accompanied Ramananda Roy. According to Vedic rituals, Ramananda Roy took his bath and he offered oblations to his forefathers. He offered the water and oblations. He made some offerings. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could understand the person who had come to bathe in the river was Ramananda Roy. Remember, he had just left and he wasn't traveling in any particular direction. And by the grace of God, or by fate, or by the arrangement of Krishna, he ended up just where he was supposed to be to meet Ramananda Roy, just at the time when Ramananda Roy was coming to bathe. The Lord wanted so much to meet him that his mind immediately began running after him. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was running after him mentally, he patiently remained sitting. And Ramananda Roy, seeing the wonderful sannyasi, then came to see him. So he was chanting, Mahaprabhu was chanting Krishna's names, and so effulgent and so beautiful. And when Ramananda Roy came with the Brahmins and the pelican and the music, Ramananda Roy saw Mahaprabhu, the sannyasi, and he was attracted to him. It's interesting to consider, what is it that attracts us to something? Like, certain people are attracted to one thing, and another kind of person will be attracted to another kind of thing. Some people like heavy metal music, and other people like symphonies, and some people like spiritual music, and some people... What is it that causes differences in attraction? This is all under the control of the modes of material nature. Do you like heavy metal music? No. I remember they used to have a festival in what's the suburb over there? That festival?
Vasindhan.
Yes. Vasindhan is quite far away, quite a few kilometers away. And they would have a concert, that's the word, not a feather. And you could hear it over here. And it was too loud. Is that right? Am I making that up? Or was that when we were on Drummond Street, we could hear it?
Yeah, it was from Drummond Street.
Yeah. But not here. No, because they stopped it, we don't know. Yeah, but so loud. And people, certain kind of people really like it. And other kind of people are thinking it's much too loud. So Ramananda Roy saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He looked as brilliant as 100 suns. He was covered by saffron garments. He was large in body and very strongly built. And his eyes were just like the petals of a lotus. Very beautiful and very big. When Ramananda Roy saw this wonderful sannyasi, he was struck with wonder, chamatkar. And immediately, what do you think he did? You think? I'll give you some choices and you can guess which. He asked him for his autograph. Second, he said, how you doing, mate? Or he offered his obeisances. Which one do you think he did immediately? Huh?
Number three.
Yes, correct. You get 100%. He offered his respectful obeisances, and he fell down like a rod, dandavat. Full obeisances, a sign of humility. The Lord stood up. He was sitting. He stood up and asked Ramananda Roy to arise, and he told him, "Uto, uto," and he said, "Ka," said, "Say Krishna, Krishna," because that's Mahaprabhu would talk to everyone like that. Just chant Krishna's names. Bolo Krishna Bhajai Krishna Koro Krishna Sika. Just chant Krishna's names, chant. Indeed, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very eager to embrace him. And then he immediately asked him, are you Ramananda Roy? And Ramananda Roy replied, he was the governor of the province, and he came with people carrying him, and he was in charge, and he had so many servants and Brahmins were chanting Vedic mantras, and there were musicians making the atmosphere pleasant. So Mahaprabhu said, are you Ramananda Roy? And Ramananda Roy replied, yes, I am your very low servant, and I belong to the Sudra, the lowest community. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately embraced him very firmly. He didn't say. Indeed, both the master and the servant almost lost consciousness due to ecstatic love. The natural love for one another, swabhavika prema doha udaya korila. Udaya means like the sun arises, that's Udai. Swabhavika means the natural prem. Swabhavika prem between the two of them, and it naturally arose. Their natural love for one another was awakened in them, and they both embraced, and then they both fell to the ground. Purport. Srila Ramananda Roy, this is what Srila Prabhupada is going to say to explain this, was an incarnation of the gopi Visakha. Since Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Lord Krishna himself, there was naturally an awakening of love between Visakha and Krishna. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the combination of Srimati Radharani and Krishna. The gopi Visakha is a principal gopi assisting Srimati Radharani. Ramananda Roy and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced since their natural love was also awakened. When they embraced one another, symptoms, ecstatic symptoms, began to appear in their body. They became stunned, stamba sveda astrukampa pulaka vaivanya. Being stunned, perspiration, tears, shivering, palpitations, and they turned pale, all the blood left their bodies. They all appeared, and the word Krishna, 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 Krishna came from their mouths, falteringly. They could barely talk. But remember, there were these Brahmins who were ritualistic Brahmins who had brought Ramananda Roy. So when these ritualistic Brahmins who were stereotyped, means that they saw everything should be done like this, like this, like this, smarta Brahmins, who were following the Vedic principles, when they saw this ecstatic manifestation of love, they were struck with wonder. How is this happening? And they began to reflect, think as follows. The Brahmanas began to think, we can see that this sannyasi has a luster like the effulgence of Brahman. But how is it? Why is it that he's crying when he embraces a sudra, a member of the fourth caste, the fourth social order? Why is he crying? And they also thought, this Ramananda Roy is the governor of Madras, of this whole province, a highly learned and grave person, a Mahapandit, he's so learned. But upon touching this sannyasi, he's become restless like a madman. So the Brahmins couldn't understand what was going on, and while they were thinking in this way, trying to understand the activities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the Brahmanas and he restrained his transcendental emotions. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Ramananda Roy was intimately related to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, therefore he can be accepted as a sajatiya, a person within the intimate circle of the Lord. The Brahmanas, however, were followers of the Vedic rituals and were not able to have an intimate connection with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So consequently, they are called Vijatiya Lok. Sajatiya and so means, sa means one's own, jati means family, like family members, intimate. And Vijatiya means not intimate. Consequently, they're called Vijatiya Lok. In other words, they were not pure devotees. One may be a highly learned Brahmana, but if he's not a pure devotee, he is Vijatiya, an outcast, one outside devotional service. In other words, a non-devotee. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy were embracing in ecstasy, the Lord restrained his transcendental emotions upon seeing the outsider Brahmanas. When they regained, as Prabhupada's word, both of them, when they regained, they became steady. Well, Prabhupada translated here, when they regained their sanity, because they had lost their minds in their ecstasy, they both sat down and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to smile and speak as follows. Okay, we'll stop here. Any questions or comments?
As for my social custom, what status
he took his birth in it. He was Kayastha. which means that he was not in any of the strictly in the any of the four of the different varnas, and the kayastas in different places are considered differently placed, and so they're often considered sudras because of the mixed type of birth. They were administrators. So Mahaprabhu was showing that what's in a person's heart, the depth of his spiritual life, is the most important point, and not the externals. The externals are required for the functioning of society, but ultimately the depth of one's Krishna consciousness is the important thing. So Mahaprabhu overlooked any lowness in birth, seeming lowness in birth.
Such a swajatiya personalities like Ramana and Vishakha, is Krishna. Why did they choose to take birth in such a social custom? Is that to disrupt the or to enhance the Kali Yuga?
Kali Yuga is already Kalo Sudra Sambhava. It's already in action. Because no one is born with sanskaras, no one follows principles. We're reading that in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam about that Rishabhdev Maharaj was instructing his sons to offer so much respect to the Brahmins, and he went like that, and then he explained the symptoms of a Brahmin. They had to, they were so qualified. So in Kali Yuga, without being qualified, if people take the position and they're supposed to have assimilated the meaning of all the Shastras, and that when they would speak on behalf of the Lord in that way. So if they, without having that any qualification, they were so sattva, so much in sattva-gun. The two main qualifications that are described is they were in sattva-gun and they were shastrically learned. So without those qualifications, if they take the position of Brahmins, that's okay in one level. But if they stop people who have those qualifications from actually performing the function that Brahmins are supposed to be, then the whole thing is lost. The purpose of the social order, to so that they guide society. Because what Rishabhdev, very interesting, what Rishabhdev Maharaj told his sons, he was instructing his 100 sons headed by Bharat. He told all the sons that you should listen to Bharat because he is the most exalted. So in Kali Yuga, no one wants to listen to anyone. So first thing was they were supposed to listen to Bharat. So Bharat, was he completely independent? No, he was supposed to listen to the Brahmanas, he explains. And were the Brahmanas completely independent? No, they were subordinate to the Shastra. So that's what was described. And the Shastra is emanating from the mouth of the Lord. So everyone is in a position of subordination according to the a proper system, and the subordination is ultimately to the Lord. But in Kali Yuga, no one wants to be subordinate to anyone. And the children don't want to be, not you, of course, but the children don't want to be subordinate to the parents. And in Australia, if you don't give your children what they want, they'll take you to court or something like that. Who knows?
In Kali Yuga,
yeah,
isn't it as much as the
Brahmins
are degraded? In other yugas, the sutras were very advanced.
So when you see, actually sutras are, as you said, that advanced too. So they fall into the same rank. On the spiritual level, you could be on the same rank. But for practical management, they had different functions to perform according to their natures. Like we saw that in one very, very wealthy devotee in Chaupati, Krishna Chandra. He's a member of the Mafatlal group of companies. So he had a driver for his car. Everyone in Bombay certainly has a driver, practically speaking, what to speak of him. So he has a driver, so he tells his driver, you drive this, this, this. But then the driver's a devotee too. But for practical purposes, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. And the driver just drives. But then when the kirtan begins, they dance together. So one is for management, but everyone has the same interest in mind. So when that essence is lost, then it describes in Bhagavatam in the first canto that Kali enters through the Brahmins. They have power, but they don't have the culture of the humility, practically speaking. And then they begin to lord it over. That's what happened. That's especially known. That's what happened in Tamil Nadu. And therefore, the ones who they were lording it over, they thought, look at these people. Why should I listen to them? So they became Christians. They became this. They became that. They became Mayavadis. They became Jains. They became Buddhists. So this is how Kali Yuga moves forward. And then the kings don't listen to. Why should I listen to them? I'll do what I want. So then the kings start acting without brahminical control. And then the vaishyas start thinking, anyway, without money, the kings can't do anything. So they'll be under my control. And then the sudras start thinking, I'm the one who does all the work. So why should I work for these people? And the wives think, why should I listen to him? And the children think, why should I listen to him and her? Kali, no one listens to anyone, and everyone thinks I should be the center. I'm not thinking that life's purpose is not to put oneself in the center, but to put Krishna in the center. Any other questions? We'll end it.
Would those Brahmins get benefit of devotional service?
Those Brahmins?
Yeah.
These ones who saw Mahaprabhu?
Yeah,
saw Mahaprabhu. But next time, when they decided, let's talk now, were together, that he didn't bring the Brahmins because they didn't have the qualification to come close, but just by seeing his most exalted supreme person.
The Brahmana must be very, very special. Brahmana serving Visakhadevi.
Agyata maybe, he didn't have knowledge, but okay. Thank you. So now, His Holiness Prahlada